Welcome to Love Amped, an exploration of healing others through healing ourselves. Check out loveamped.com for additional resources and support.
Blast into self-love, the journey to revolutionizing your inner world, the online course by Seth Pearson of Love Amped, is available now at loveamped.com. In this program, you will evolve to a fully self-compassionate version of yourself by identifying and growing in self-love areas that have been holding you back for years, maybe even your entire life. We will learn about the concepts surrounding emotions and how to address those emotions through journaling and self-reflection. We will face our fears to transmute them into positive thought patterns that stick for life. All this in 15 easy-to-understand sections with videos, journaling, and exercises for you to try at home. Blast into self-love, the journey to revolutionizing your inner world. The online course by Seth Pearson of Love Amped is available now at loveamped.com.
Love Amped.
What up, Ampers, and welcome back to Love Amped. I'm your host, Seth Pearson, and this week we're talking with Tyler Malin, former personal trainer turned software engineer, and is one of my best friends. We'll be talking about how judgment is a gauge that can be calibrated and help us move through this life in a more efficient and joyful way. We'll also be talking about how being vulnerable in friendships can nurture trust, and how that trust can also be nurtured within oneself. So, enjoy the show. It's going to be really fun. Tyler Malin! Oh, my gosh. We have been trying. We've been prying. We've been crying about the possibility of this experience, this conversation happening.
I don't know who we is, but
since probably the first time we met at a party, you know.
Yeah.
What, maybe 5 years ago now?
Well, I moved here like almost 6 years ago now. So it could have been five. Yeah, it could have been 5 years. Yeah. Crazy.
It's so crazy. Tyler, do you remember when I told you about when I met you that I didn't like you?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what you said though. What, like, why you didn't, you know, like me or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember what you said.
So like the like kind of experience of that for me was when I met Tyler, I was like, this man has qualities that I want that I don't know how to access myself. I saw the healthy masculinity inside of you that I didn't know how to step into.
Interesting.
And so I was very jealous.
Well, it's good to be a healthy man.
He's so healthy. Look at him. He's so healthy.
Not this.
Those not on the podcast, we're seeing currently a healthy man and a cat with a cone on on his head. Poor Switch. Yeah. Tyler, so, but I mean, obviously I came around. I came around.
Yeah. It's been great since then. No, I didn't even know. I didn't even know about the before time. You know, I had no idea.
Yeah. I kept a little secret. Little secret.
The low profile.
Tyler, what has been, do you remember what you told me? What was that? What party were we at where you told, or it was maybe like the Seattle Bouldering Project, where you're like, Seth, I feel so comfortable around you that something. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it at Seattle Bouldering Project, but I said it some other time, you know. But we talked about it at SPP. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I said, I said it's because you are like, what was it? It's because you're willing to like put yourself out there a lot, you know, like you're willing to make to put yourself in a very vulnerable position, right? Like where you could very, very easily be judged. Like we can all be judged at all points of the day, all the time, but it's more likely when we're doing stuff that's maybe not super normal or whatever, you know, however you want to call it. Right. And you're willing to put yourself in those positions pretty frequently. And that has this sort of like reciprocal effect almost of like making you a comfortable person to be around, because it's like if you're willing to put yourself in a position of vulnerability where you can be judged, then you automatically look less judgmental, right? Like you now come across like you're not going to judge me for whatever it is I'm going to do, because you just did some weird thing, you know, and like, that's the kind of, it's that sort of like I said, it feels reciprocal, right? It's like,
yeah.
You make yourself, not that you're like giving yourself an appearance or whatever, but you know, you gain the appearance of being not a judgmental person, right? And that's the thing that makes you comfortable to be around. Because people that aren't going to judge, you know, they you feel like you can just be yourself. It doesn't matter what you say or do or whatever. You know, they're not going to judge you. Kind of because it's like if they're being themselves and they're in a position of being judged, you know, they also don't want to be judged, right? So it also comes down to the whole like golden rule thing, kind of like treat people how you want to be treated. And so if you clearly don't want to be judged, which is everybody, right? But it's also that statement is more obvious when you're putting yourself in positions to be judged, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't want to be judged, then you're also, you're probably less likely, and this isn't always true, but you're probably less likely to judge other people, right? Mm-hmm. Just because we sort of have, I mean, again, some people don't, this is maybe not true for everybody, but I feel like we sort of have this like gauge in our head for hypocrisy, right? It's like, if I'm going to do a thing and be afraid of judgment and then judge you, I'm going to recognize it right away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like you sort of know, it's like I trust you because you put yourself in those positions more frequently.
Kind of. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
When have you seen that hypocrisy in the closest people in your life?
That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I've definitely seen it. I guess the first example that comes to mind is like social media, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen people, you know, behind someone's back, judge someone on a social media post, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Like locally with friends, right? So they'll be like with friends in a room or at a party, the person who they're judging isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that person's post on social media, and so then they sort of talk about it or bring it up, judge it, whatever, in that context, right? And it's like you sort of naturally, like these people also post stupid shit on social media, right? Like
yeah.
Like how, like, what would, you know, they wouldn't, certainly would not want that same treatment, you know, mm-hmm. over something that they thought was fun or cool or like whatever it was, but they do it anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think, you know, that sort of goes against that thing that I said, you know, first, which was like, people, we sort of have this natural sense of hypocrisy, right? But I think...
Do you want to use I statements there, Tyler?
What did you say?
You want to use I statements there?
I feel the hypocrisy thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I feel the hypocrisy more closely. Well, actually, let me rephrase that. Like, I feel the hypocrisy more when it is like inversely proportional to distance, kind of.
Okay.
So, like, on social media, I don't feel it very much because I'm so far removed from the subject, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no immediate feedback loop there because I'm just too far away, right? Mm-hmm. But in person, I feel it really strongly. You know, I'll feel it probably right away. If I judge a thing and then do the thing I judged, you know, if I judged it in person and then I do it around other people in person, I'll feel it right away.
Mm-hmm.
But on social media, you know, or whatever, you just, I don't know. I'm too far removed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that hypocrisy gauge, doesn't work as well over distance. I think the closer you are, the better it works. But as distance increases, its effectiveness decreases.
So it comes back to the times that, I mean, that we've seen each other be like vulnerable and be in positions where you and I like could judge each other, yeah. That you and I, and are at least, you know, on my end, and yeah, as you were saying, like building that, like that comfort, that trust, that almost I don't know, like connectedness and like intimacy, because we've been through these experiences together.
Yeah.
And have seen like, it's only been positive. It's only been positive.
Right.
And which I'm wondering, what are like the top three or five like wildest things that you've seen me do in person that you just thought, wow, there he goes.
Man.
There's been so many.
Well, yeah, there's quite a few. We were at Shambhala and you just like stood in the river and took your underwear off and like yelled when you did it. Like to draw attention. You know, there's that. That was, you know, not necessary.
That was incredible, because what did I say? Yeah. I just said, I'm doing it.
Yeah. And there was nobody around. There was like, you were like 20 feet away from anybody else. There was nobody near. Like, it was like the perfect setup to be as uncomfortable as possible. You know? So like that was, you know, that was a thing.
That was fucking good. Oh my God.
Also, like, I guess the number two is just sort of in general, like, just stories that you tell about your, you know, your adventures are pretty, like, just open, right? Like, they're things that some people might be uncomfortable about, and maybe you even were, you know, but you told it anyway, right? And then, like, another one is at your birthday, right? When, like, you know, we had talked about the... like masculine identification before, like identifying as a man, or, you know, we've talked about that a bit in the past. Mm-hmm. And then at your birthday, you know, you like stood up in front of a crowd with a microphone and like said it, which was like particularly vulnerable, right? Like it's, you know, so that was pretty good.
I forgot I talked about that on a microphone.
Yeah. On a microphone. Yeah. And then also, you know, another one, like inviting your dad to like stuff, like, you, first of all, nobody does that. Nobody invites their parents to anything. And second of all, to like things that are also just kind of like weird, or like to Shambhala, or, you know, stuff like that, is also pretty, like, it's something that I would not do that. You know, I would not invite, you know, my parents to this shit. Like, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are some good ones, I would say.
Thanks. Those are fun. I love to hear what are just the ones that come to mind, because
they really are just like I said, kind of vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, you mentioned the trust thing. You know, I don't know if I told you this before or not, but you know, I feel like that trust thing also plays out in other ways too. Like, but it's other ways, but they're very similar, you know, in the expression of them, I guess. I had a friend, who, I guess we're still friends. We haven't talked in a long time, but, we would go and hang out every so often, you know, and it would be typically months in between hangouts. And he would always be like, okay, so, you know, what's going on? You know, how you been? What's, you know, what's new? What, you know, is there any drama with work or a living situation or school or a girlfriend or like anything, right? Like, what, you know, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And I would just like tell him, you know, I'd tell him all the stuff. And then I'd be like, so what's up with you? And he would just be like, oh, nothing. And I'm like, nothing? Like, I just told you like literally like everything. And, yeah. And it's like, okay, it's fine. Like, not everybody has stuff going on, but it would be like this every time, where it got to the point where it became like pretty clear that, yeah, I don't think he didn't trust me or whatever. He's just more closed off. Like, he was just more, you know, he just isn't likely to open up very, very easily. And that had this effect of like making me kind of not want to open up to him as much anymore. Right. It's like that, you on some level you gain trust by giving it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like you, yeah, right. If you don't give a little bit, it makes you kind of look like you don't want to, like that you're not trustworthy. Like, you're willing to take all the information and now I got all this stuff on you, but yeah, you get nothing, right? Yeah. Like, I, you know, I stay safe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of weird. So like I said, it plays out in other ways too, not just the vulnerability exactly, but the trust is a big part of it.
Right?
Yeah.
Interesting. I love that. I love that, giving that the importance of giving that trust, that it's not about this game of like trying to just get it from other people, like in terms of just taking it. It's like also about reciprocating it and the different ways that trust can be nurtured and displayed and, interesting.
Yeah. You can't really, I think it's hard to look trustworthy without being vulnerable at least a little bit. I think it's hard because you kind of always look like you got something to hide. You know what I mean? And it's like, if you, and that doesn't really, regardless of how good of a listener you are, how well you receive, you know, vulnerability from other people, if you kind of always look like you got something to hide, then you look like, I don't know, maybe I don't want you to know this about me, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like why?
What else is going on? There literally can be anything going on that I don't know what's happening for someone else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. Has there kind of been like a time that you've been in where that's proven that another person actually wasn't trustworthy? Like, where that kind of played out in a way that?
Yeah, I'm sure. Where, well, I mean, I think typically, I guess at least in my experience, the things that I, where that plays out the most, or the most frequently, or the most obviously, is less in the case of, well, okay, let me frame it like this. So like in that case with my buddy, right? He's kind of, And I use this phrase like super lightly, like I don't think it's this serious, whatever, but mm-hmm. he's kind of lying by omission,
mm-hmm.
right? Like when he asks me what's going on and I tell him, and I say, what's going on with you? And he says nothing. There's no, what are the chances that that's true? Right? I mean, it's like minuscule, like there's nothing, right? There's no way that there's literally nothing that you could talk about. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's kind, and like, I don't mean for it to sound serious. Like, I use the term lie, right? Like,
yeah,
like that he's purposely deceiving me necessarily, but he is kind of lying by omission. Yeah. Right?
There could be some subconscious actions at play here.
Something going on. And so I feel like, You know, so with that as kind of the framework, right, I feel like there have been plenty of other times in the past for me with, like, with girlfriends as an example, where, you know, it's more than a friendship. So you sort of inherently know that there's a little bit more at stake, right, in the relationship, right? There's a little bit more investment. Losing it is a more sudden process, typically with like a romantic partner as opposed to with a friend. When you lose friends, it usually takes a long time. You know, it's like a slow fade out with like a romantic partner. Sometimes it's just like, bang, it's over, right?
Yeah.
And so with romantic partners, that kind of like lie by omission thing has come up for me, you know, quite a bit, where, you know, whoever I'm dating, they probably have a stronger sense that they want to hide something from me, or that they're afraid of me finding something out. Mm-hmm. Compared to my friend, who that probably wasn't the case, right? He probably just is just lazy conversationalist, right? Like that's all it is. I've seen cases where it's like, okay, I'm dating someone, and I open up to you, and I'm really not hiding anything. Mm-hmm. But some insecurity on you know, my partner's part makes them not able to express whatever it is that's really going on, right? And that could be something as simple as, like, I don't know, just having like an attraction for someone else. Mm-hmm. Or it could be something severe, like they cheated on me, right? Mm-hmm. Like and anything in between, right? Mm-hmm. And so they sort of like, they know that they don't want me to find that out, but here I am opening up. And then the same thing kind of happens. They just kind of lie by omission. Like, oh, what'd you do today? And there's a dozen things they did. And then there's a 13th thing. And that 13th thing happens to be that they texted their ex-boyfriend, right? Mm-hmm. Out of nowhere. And it's like, you'll tell me the first dozen, but not that last one. And so there, again, it's just a kind of, I wasn't like, did you text this guy today every day? And they say no, right? It's like, no, they just didn't tell me. Right. And so then, you know, what happens then is like, I trust them more. Right. Mm-hmm. And I never even know that there's anything amiss. Whereas like with my friend, you know, after two or three times of hanging out, after we hadn't seen each other for a while, you know, a few months go by, we hang out and then it's like, you do this every time.
Yeah.
Now I kind of know something's going on.
Yeah.
So I've seen it played out, maybe not so much in friends, but in other types of relationships. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how did in that how has that played out in those times when cheating happens?
Poorly. Super poorly. It's played out very bad. I mean, you know, it's weird because like there is, so, you know, like we just talked about judgment, right? Like general judgment. And judgment is not bad by itself. Mm-hmm. You cannot survive unless you make judgment calls. You mm-hmm. can't do it.
And how, what do you think about the difference between the words judgment and discernment?
That's interesting.
Something that I've been contemplating, and I don't have my fully formed, you know, opinion on this. I am very curious.
Yeah. So to me, discernment feels more like being able to tell the difference between options. Judgment is assessing the value of the options compared to one another. Right. So, and that's why I use the term judgment, you know, in this sense. And I say, you know, that you basically can't survive unless you make judgment calls, because that's what life really is. It's about deciding, like, among all the myriad of options, which one is the best for me. right? In this moment, or in this the broader time spectrum, more than just a moment, but like the big moment, right? Mm-hmm. And inability to do that is catastrophic, right? If you know, or an ability to do it that is tuned poorly, so that you make bad judgment calls, you know, you make the wrong judgment call more often than you make the right one, something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's a difference, right? Discerning is just being able to tell the difference, to tell that there is a difference between two things. Mm-hmm. And judgment is the ability to see the value, the sort of contextual value of mm-hmm. one thing, you know, over another.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, so judgment isn't bad. It's not inherently bad. You have to do it. You know, it's bad in cases, like I said before, you know, like hypocrisy, right? Like if you judge a thing that you later do, that calls into question the health of your judgment gauge, right? Because if you're going to do it, then maybe that gauge shouldn't be tuned to a level where you condemn it when someone else does it.
Right? Nice. Yeah.
So you asked how did it play out in the cases of cheating or whatever in relationships?
And actually, before going into that, I also want to go into when you were married, that how judgment and discernment was used for you in the times that, from what you've shared in the past with me, that, yeah. I mean, because everyone listening, Tyler is an amazing person, okay? He's incredible. He is just a gosh darn good person.
Thank you.
That nice. Wants to work things out.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's just open to the possibilities.
Yeah. So you said, how did that work in my marriage?
Yes, yes.
Like for me, like how did I use it? Like use judgment, and that's what you mean, that kind of thing?
Yes, yes. Because it kind of like could tell that because there was a length of time. 7 years?
About eight.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give them what they need to know here.
Well, I mean, there was definitely, you know, like I was kind of saying, judgment is a gauge, right? And, it, you know, like any gauge, it has to be calibrated. Otherwise it gives you false readings, you know? And my judgment gauge was not very well calibrated, you know. Maybe that's not quite the right way to put it. Maybe a better way to put it is that it was calibrated against the wrong metric, right? So, you know, quick analogy, right? Like if you have a thermometer, it's supposed to tell the temperature, but you somehow calibrate it to tell moisture, right? Mm. Then it's like a barometer, right? So then it's technically accurate. You just think that it's calibrated to the wrong thing, right? So you use that gauge to make judgment calls, whether you want to wear a jacket or not, right? Based upon the humidity, which is probably not the right thing to do, you know? And so that's kind of like what I was doing, right? Like the marriage was not good. I guess I don't really know what a good marriage is, but I should say the relationship was not good, you know? A marriage is a different thing maybe, but like the relationship was not good. Mm-hmm. And, it's like I knew that, you know, it's like I could look at the situation a bit and see, okay, this is not great. But that threshold of, you know, good, okay, neutral, bad, really bad. You know, all those levels were calibrated against, like I said, against a different metric or against a different scale. And for me, that scale was, I guess, two things. It was culture and like my expectations based upon, I guess, based upon that culture, right? So a more concrete example is like, yeah, the relationship was bad. I knew it was bad for a long time. I also knew at multiple points that it was not good, you know, like explicit points that it was not good, many. But every time I looked at my gauge and I looked at those thresholds and I thought, you know, is it bad enough to call it quits, right? I always came up with, no, it's not bad enough. And that's because, you know, those thresholds were set based upon this sort of cultural belief, I guess, that I had, you know, which is that, I mean, there were many, but like as an example, you know, when I was growing up, all I ever heard was, oh, marriage is so hard. Marriage is super hard. It's really hard. You got to work on it all the time. It's a lot of work. It's really rewarding, but it's a lot of work. It's really hard, right? Mm-hmm. So when, you know, that basically set my expectations really low, long story short. Mm-hmm. And so when bad stuff would happen, or when I would assess the relationship overall, you know, I would find that I never hit those thresholds because I set them so low as to be absurd. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, so it's like my judgment gauge was well calibrated for a fairly traditional American cultural marriage mindset. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is, you know, men just don't care at all, and women can't live with them, can't live without, you know. It was just like super like old school, like I Love Lucy almost levels, yeah, of like expectation for what a good relationship really was. And so I was really well calibrated for that, and it never made me happy. Mm-hmm. Right? So I was able to judge it, but still my judgment was off.
Yeah, and to give some, like, maybe some context for others to experience their own judgment gauge, just to, yeah, see how they experience it. What were maybe just, like, two examples of some moments where you're like, this probably, like, I probably should have, me as Tyler, like, should have ended this, like, right then and here.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be tough to filter them down to two because there's like so many.
Okay, you can get five. It's only five to ten. Like,
well, you know, there's just stuff like as an example, whenever there would be a conflict between she and I, she would call me names. Mm. Whenever there would be an argument, she would like not participate. She would walk off, right? And then she would never come back, right? She would just want that to be the end, I guess. Whenever I suggested like couples therapy, she rejected the you know, the suggestion, which happened multiple times. Right? Not a ton, but at least two or three times, mm-hmm, including, you know, at the end, right? When we were getting divorced, right? Mm-hmm. Also just showing a lack of respect for effort that I would put in, you know, to try to like make things better. Clear examples of like a lack of an ability to, or a lack of a willingness to, I guess, interact with me, you know, like as an example, I don't know, she'd be watching YouTube videos and I would be like, hey, blah blah blah, and she'd be mad that I interrupted a YouTube video, and I'm like, you can pause it, like is it going to disappear? I don't understand. And it was just, and they wouldn't be like deep YouTube videos, they'd be like Conan O'Brien clips, right? Like give me 2 minutes, you know, or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Also like a lack of a willingness to like meet me on a certain level in terms of responsibility. So like, there was almost no reasonableness in terms of, you know, I don't know, chore delegation, you know, when you're living together with someone, that kind of thing. Right. And it, so it just goes on and on, you know? And there were just times when each one of those, you know, some of them might have been big enough to be a big deal, but each one of those alone is maybe not that big of a deal. Right. Maybe she's got a pet peeve about when she's watching a show, somebody interrupts her and it's like a thing. I mean, fine. Right. But like, you know, you get into an argument and like, she calls me names, you know, like it's just, this is not super compatible. You know, there's no, the communication styles are not going to work. And I would try to address that. And she just wouldn't, there was never any change. There was never any effort for change. It just seemed like it, you know, I don't, she had no interest in kind of a meeting of the minds, you know, on that kind of stuff. So again, some of those things were bigger than others. Maybe not, no one thing was big enough, but all put together, like I said, it slowly calibrates your gauge, right? It's like, because you're also kind of calibrating it based upon your own happiness. You know, you're going, okay, well, I Love Lucy told me that that marriage is hard and I'm just supposed to be happy and like work through it. Right. Yeah. But I'm not happy, you know? So it's, they're constantly kind of like those ideals are kind of fighting against one another, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course it's not all on one side, you know, it's not all happiness is the be all end all, you know, there also has to be some work, right. Or, doesn't have to be, but there's very likely going to be work in almost every case.
Yeah.
But those are instances where it's like, okay, if there's like a pretty, like conflict resolution is a pretty big one, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, if you can't, I don't know. Yeah. You need either a natural inclination towards the same style of conflict resolution, or you need a system that both people are willing to adapt. Mm-hmm. to adopt to resolve conflict. Like that's super important, right? And so, and that was, you know, that goes to the like calling me names thing or whatever. And it's just, it was pretty clear that wasn't going to be good, you know?
Yeah.
But I just thought, well, whatever, you know? But then over time, like I said, your gauge slowly calibrates and you get a better feel for what really matters, you know?
And I'm sure that you're kind of being with other people like your friends and stuff. You probably would notice, well, this isn't happening at all.
Yeah. One time she had some friends from work over and we were like playing board games, party games, whatever. I don't remember exactly what the context was. The team we were on, we like got it right. And I was really excited. Uh-huh. And she said something to me that was pretty shitty. And I can't remember what it is now, but it was pretty shitty. And her friend, who I had never met before, this girl.
Yeah.
Out loud said like, damn, like at her for what she said to me. Right. Now imagine the nerve it takes to be in somebody else's house for the first time. Yes. And call them out for something that they say to their spouse, right? Yeah. Like that never happens, but it happened, right? She was like, holy, you know, and that was, you know, I don't know if I really appreciated it as much at the time, you know, but looking back on it like that, I still remember it, right? So it was clearly a formative moment in my judgment gauge.
Yeah.
So like you said, being around other people, right? Not just being around friends who don't do that, but also being around people who notice that what you're going through sucks. Mm-hmm. Right? And that sort of constant exposure can slowly change your mind on what, you know, what really matters.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was, kind of the moment that you kind of basically chose yourself over the relationship in that time?
It was right after she asked me for a divorce. Like it took that long, took all the way up to that. Wow. I was still just like, I had the mindset of like, I'm going to grind it out, you know, like this is what, but also, you know, as like a contextual point, I'm not as much like this anymore I think for the better. But at the time, you know, I was very, like a completionist, right? Like I'm like, I'm the person who, you know, for the most part, I do what I say I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very careful to say I'm going to do something because I know that I have this sort of commitment mindset, right? Mm-hmm. If I say I'm going to do it, I'm really going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Self-accountability. And, you know,
yeah, yeah. And like, you know, when you get married, you know, you stand up there and you say some pretty serious stuff. Like you make some really, for me at the time, the first or second most serious commitments I'd ever made in my life. Mm-hmm. Maybe the only other thing that was equally serious was like joining the Air Force, right? Because they make you stand up there and they make you take the oath, you know, of service, and you know, and it's the same kind of commitment. You know, it feels like a very long term serious commitment. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, when you get married, you just make crazy commitments. And so for me, you know, at the time, like I said, I'm the kind of person who's like, if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And that did not play in to my benefit very well, you know, because then I'm more likely to suffer through stuff that I shouldn't be. But to answer your question, you know, that's part of why it was so easy for me to adopt the sort of traditional cultural mindset of marriage is hard, you just got to get through it, because I'm also like the commitment, you know, slut, right? like if I commit, you know.
yeah.
And so so
we got him to say it on camera officially.
Yeah. So it was all the way up until like she asked me for a divorce, right? And I was like really against it. I didn't want to do it. I asked to go to marriage counseling, and I just had to, you know, I had to try to convince her. And I had convinced her to give me, like, I think it was, you know, she wanted to get divorced right away. I mean, it was lightning fast. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember now, but I think I kind of tried to talk her out of it over a couple days, and it just wasn't working. She was just like, nope, nope, nope. So I said, okay, can we just chill on this decision for a minute? You know, can we like get, you know, can we just think about it? It's a huge decision. Can we think about it? And she was like, well, how long? And I think I said, you know, I don't know, 3 months or something. And she goes, no, that's too long. And I was like, 2 months. And so she said, okay, you know, 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then like halfway into that time period, whatever that time period was, you know, she came home from work one day basically and was just like, okay, you know, it's, nothing's changing. It's over. And I remember thinking, you said, you know, you gave me 2 months, like and it's only been a month, or maybe I asked for a month and it had only been 2 weeks, you know, whatever it was like half.
Yeah.
And so she was like, nope, you know, let's do it. And so it was like right then that my mind just like clicked over, and I was like, okay, like, look, you know, I'll file the paperwork. Right. And I did. And I just did it all right then. And it was kind of this weird, like, realization, you know, of a lot of things. It was a realization that there were many times in the past in our relationship when I had wanted to be divorced, mm-hmm. you know, when I had just wished that, when I knew the relationship was bad and it should have been over and we shouldn't be in it anymore, you know, mm-hmm. Combined with, you know, this moment being like the culmination of like her, all those other things about her being disagreeable, about her not wanting to meet me in the middle, about zero ability to compromise or see anything from my perspective almost at all. And that all sort of, like I said, that all sort of culminated in that moment too. And I just kind of clicked over, like, you know, I'm not going to fight. Why am I going to try to keep somebody who just told me they don't want me, you know, like this is just, and I don't even think I want them. Mm-hmm. No, like it's not like this thing is all roses for me all day, every day. It's not good, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And so that moment really just like kicked me over. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay, this is, you know, this is not only is this unfixable, but it's also what I want. So why am I fighting it? Mm. So I just went all in on the, you know, the dissolution, and yeah, so
love it. Love yeah. that you were able to, it's like you followed through on that, that commitment that you had to yourself so beautifully, even though it was doing a lot, it was hurting you, you know.
Yeah, it was not good. Yeah.
And I know nowadays, like, you don't do the things that are hurting you like that, you know? Like,
yeah, it's just it's weird. It's weird because we have this, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's probably pretty common to kind of go against that feeling of what's best for you, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many other forces pulling you in every other direction. You know, there's other people, there's cultural stuff, there's societal expectations. You know, there's so many things that make you, you know, reconsider or question the real paramount priority value of just yourself feeling good when you lay down at night and close your eyes alone by yourself. Yeah. Right? It's like that's so valuable to a level that's almost, it's hard to overstate how valuable that is. But there's all these other forces that make you think either it's not that valuable or that other things are so much more important that it's okay to sacrifice that for those things. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. There's some things that are important enough to sacrifice that for, but they're pretty rare. Like they're few and far between, you know, they're not super common. And so it's like, I feel like over time, you know, going back to the question about like the judgment gauge, you know, it's like the calibration of that gauge sort of is the act of filtering, right? Like you're filtering out all the things that don't matter, which are far more numerous than the things that do. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like, it's like, you know, you have like a sieve, right? And you're, you know, like panning for gold, right? It's like,
yeah,
if you scoop up a bunch of mud and then you don't sift, you don't filter out all the stuff you don't want, and you just start picking through it looking for gold, it's really hard to find. Mm-hmm. And there's only like a speck of gold in there. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that you find that gold is by getting rid of recognizing all the things you don't want. Mm-hmm. And getting rid of those, right? So that it's easier to see the valuable stuff. It can be really hard to see if it's all mixed up with everything else. So it's like, it's almost like your judgment gauge, it's like it almost can't be calibrated to find the single piece of gold among a million other particles that you're not interested in. Right? It's mm-hmm. like your judgment gauge almost has to be like, I don't know, just like a shovel that you just, you scoop out big pieces that you know for sure you've somehow figured out through mm-hmm. experience or through listening to other people, you know, that kind of thing, whatever. You sift out all the other stuff. And that cuts down on your, you know, the effort you have to put into your search for the gold by a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you never do that, if you always think, you know, you never have that filtering mechanism, you know, like for me in my relationship, right, where I filter out bad communication styles, right? It's like if I never filter that out and then I date somebody and they've got, you know, XYZ communication style that is of course going to be at least slightly unique to them because nobody's exactly the same as somebody else. Like if I can't weigh that against anything, then I have no idea whether it's good or not, right? Whether it's going to match me or whatever. Yeah. So it's like, you kind of have to, it's like, okay, you have that experience. You see that poor communication style, and then you add it to the extremely long list and growing of things that you know for sure you don't like. That you don't want, that don't work, and then go from there.
Yeah. You
know, it's tricky.
I love that. I love that. Bringing even in the metaphors. I love it. that's how you know. That's when the lessons will be learned.
It's all in the metaphor.
It's the only way.
Yeah. Yeah. They work. What can I say?
Totally work. They're really great. I'm not dishing on metaphors. I love metaphors.
I actually think they kind of work more than personal experience. Really. Like there's something about a metaphor that's more understandable than if I just told you a story about like a bad girlfriend I had or something, right? It's like, cause when that happens, you know, you just kind of go, oh yeah, that's you, right? Like it makes it hard if someone isn't
calibrated to like take in, or like if I'm not calibrated to take in the actual wisdom that like,
right,
someone's experience holds, and like not knowing how to absorb it.
Right. It's like, then you just listen to the story.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh wow, what a crazy story. You were married and she was terrible. Right. It's like, but then you give the, you know, use some sort of a metaphor that's,
then you bring the gosh darn sieve out.
Yeah. You bring out the sieve, you bring out the, you go back to the gold rush. Poignant, or, you know, and
all the wisdom comes
from. All the kids are talking about the gold rush nowadays. But yeah, it's like it pulls that element of personal experience out of it, you know, which it's so strange to me that is the part that makes it hard to relate to, right? It's like the fact that you did it makes it harder for me to relate because I'm not you, no matter how similar we are, you know. But as soon as you start talking about, well, an apple, you know, think about when an apple's got a core in it and you got to, you know, whatever it is, I go, oh yeah, the apple core. you know, it's just like a weird thing. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I ate an apple today.
I totally get it. Yeah. So I don't know.
Like when you're like, bed's made, but the sheets aren't on yet, and you're like, damn, like how is the
sheet? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I slept in the bed last night.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird way. Yeah.
So what is some book? Because I know it's time. You know, it's close to time.
I got time.
Okay, he's got time. What are the ways that you think are the most important to love yourself that you think other people might want to know?
That's interesting. Most important ways.
Those that are watching the YouTube, I'm flipping my hair in front of myself to look kind of emo and just,
yeah,
knew it'd get a laugh.
It's looking good. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's quarantine length right there.
Thank you.
Quarantine length on that.
Quality, yeah. Quarantine length.
Let's see. Most important ways to love yourself. Well, I would say that, I don't know, I guess it feels true to me that that there is an element of love that is connected to appreciation. And it can be hard to appreciate something that you don't know very well, right? Pick almost anything, and your level, like your ability to appreciate that thing is pretty directly correlated to how well you know it, right? It's like, it'd be really hard to watch baseball and fully appreciate like a double play or something, you know, hitting a home run, right? Striking someone out as a pitcher, right? If you don't know baseball very well, it's really hard to appreciate just what that is, right? How hard it is, how valuable it is, how cool it is, you know? And so I think that can be applied to most things, right? Is that the better you know something, the more you can appreciate it. And insofar as appreciation is attached to love, as I don't know if I would call love an element of appreciation or appreciation an element of love, right? I think they're kind of intertwined in a way, mm-hmm. You know? you can't, like, so then the idea is, if you want to appreciate something more, get to know it better. And so if you're going to increase your appreciation, your love of yourself, you got to get to know yourself better. I think that's super important, right? And a lot of that, you know, that's done in lots of different ways. You know, I think it's a mix of having a lot of new experiences, which is kind of inherently risky. Mm-hmm. And having a lot of familiar experiences that is sort of inherently safe. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like through whatever individual's unique balance of those two things, right? Based upon their personality. They might be oriented more towards new experiences. They might be oriented more towards familiar things, right? But you probably need at least a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a person's balance on that scale will determine, for example, something along the lines of whether or not they should, when they just got out of a breakup, whether or not they should date someone else, someone new again right away, or whether they should go be alone for a while, right? If you gravitate more towards like the familiar experiences, then probably go be alone, right? Connect with something familiar, connect with yourself, get to know yourself better, right? If you connect more with new experiences, then go out and get more exposure, right? Expose yourself to new people and new ideas and new happiness and new trauma and new all kinds of stuff, mm-hmm. right? And so that process of like getting to know yourself better allows you to appreciate yourself, appreciate who you are, how much fun you have, what you have to offer to other people, the goodness that you bring to other people's lives, you know? And I probably would not believe if you told me that like that does not increase your self-love, like your love for yourself, right? Like there's no way that doesn't increase how much you love yourself. When I think about the people in my life, you know, if someone new comes in and they, you know, they enhance that a new friend, right? They enhance that person's experiences. They're, you know, they make my friends laugh. They, you know, all the good things. My love for that person goes up. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be applied to myself too, right? If I get to know myself and I sort of know what I have to offer, And I know the value of it. I just know myself better. I can appreciate myself to a higher level and then love myself better. Love myself more.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I think that's hard though, you know? I think it's hard to like really know yourself. It takes so much time. Plus you like constantly change. So it's not just like learning a subject, you know, like learning history or something, you know. Where you sort of learn the fact and then you're just done, right? It's like you have
to use I statements again.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just it's just a constant change all the time,
yeah.
Right? And staying on top of that change is important, mm-hmm. you know. But it's hard. It's hard.
And what do you think about the best ways within relationship to make sure that you, Tyler, are growing alongside with someone, that you're not just with someone and like sticking or like making sure that you're not creating a sense of familiarity just for the sake of familiarity, that you're also like growing in intimacy in parallel with someone while growing at the same time.
Well, you know, there's that like adage of, what is it, about comfort and conflict or something, right? That you don't grow when you're comfortable, something like that. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what it is, but you know, comfort, I think comfort is good on some level.
Same here. I completely agree.
Yeah. But the question is, like, how do you continue to grow alongside someone? How to make sure how do I make sure that myself, I'm continuing to grow with the person and increase intimacy at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like the comfort zone. It's maybe both people's comfort zone is time over time. Is like they're also, we're going outside of our own comfort zones and maybe together, maybe alone, and that's increasing the circle. It's saying that there can still be overlap, or like maybe some of our comfort zones are still overlap, but we're also still growing.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. The Venn diagram, you know, analogy, I think is a good one. Cause you definitely, you know, if you're in conflict all the time, if you're never comfortable, that relationship sucks. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're never in conflict, that's almost worse, mm-hmm. because it is more insidious, right? Because it makes you think that it's great. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that over time, you know, maybe you don't grow as much, mm-hmm. right? And when there's no growth, there is stagnation a lot of the time, right? Yeah. And there's a difference between comfort and stagnation, you know?
Right.
Comfort is largely good, but stagnation is not. And I, you know, I think there's, the differences are nuanced, but ultimately, yeah, that Venn diagram of like someone who pushes you, which you could call conflict in a, totally using that term in a non-negative connotation.
Nice. Right? I think it's great to mention that, because me growing up, that's how I thought of it. And when I heard and started to change the whole paradigm.
That's everybody.
Good for me.
You just, when almost everybody, I feel like when you're growing up, you associate the word conflict with the word fight.
Yeah.
Totally. Fights are bad. Nobody, you know, mom and dad are fighting, right? It's like, So like healthy conflict and also unhealthy conflict, right? To a degree, a certain amount of it is also okay. You know, it's tolerable, I think, and is also good for growth. If you never have unhealthy conflict, you never know how you react in an unhealthy, conflicted state, right? And that's mm-hmm. important to know. Mm-hmm. If for no other reason than that you can now better stave it off, you know, later.
Right.
But yeah, so in terms of like growing with someone and increasing intimacy without it being just chaotic all the time, conflict mm-hmm. all the time, mm-hmm. For me, that kind of comes down to communication, I guess, is probably number one, but there's like another thing in there that is attached to communication or subordinate to communication, maybe subordinate to communication, which is boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, if I have a boundary that I don't communicate, it is meaningless. It's useless.
Right.
And that doesn't mean I need to say it every time, but I need to say it at least once. Because I can't expect my partner to be a mind reader. Mm-hmm. And often, a lot of the conflict that I've experienced, even in my really good relationships, comes from a failure of communication. Mm-hmm. And no matter how good you are at communication, no matter how good of a communicator you are or your partner is, there will always be failures somewhere along the way. And so it's, you know, often it's like, if I'm good at communicating my boundaries, then there's also kind of an area there, you know, where like my boundary is here, mm-hmm. and but then like my absolute no is out here. But now there's like a space in between, right? And as long as the communication is flowing, you know, for the most part, crossing of that inner boundary is really not that bad. You know, it makes me realize that that boundary is actually here now, right? The hard boundary is still out here, but it's like, you know, and that's growth, right? It's like, growth, I think, is kind of the redrawing of your boundaries.
Ooh.
You know?
Ooh.
Yeah. It's like you can draw them closer in or you can draw them farther out.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, you know, you can't really do that unless you know. Unless, like, you're not just going to arbitrarily draw your boundary out here for no reason. You know, you're going to, something's going to happen. It's going to make you want to extend it or retract it. And the healthy ways to do that are with communication. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about stuff. You expose you and your partner or partners to new ideas, your friends, you know, whatever relationship you're in, all to new ideas all the time. Mm-hmm. And when boundaries are crossed, you communicate that. And it's through that process that you figure it out. And when you come out the other side, you have typically a better understanding of yourself, a better understanding of the people that you interacted with, like your partner in this case, in a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would call growth. Growth is basically changing in such a way that your boundaries are redrawn, always for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And then using that to nurture your relationships is dependent upon your ability to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's kind of, it's kind of a big answer, I guess, but to like trim it down. Yeah. If you're going to like grow and increase intimacy with your partner kind of at the same time, it's not about avoiding conflict. It's, you could maybe argue it's about minimizing conflict, but when conflict comes up, being clear in your communication,
mm-hmm,
about your needs and, you know, that stuff, your boundaries, being willing and open to listening to your partner's boundaries as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being respectful of those, so that sort of ebb and flow of, you know, your boundaries being in flux, you know, all the time. Unless, of course, you have really hard boundaries on really specific things, deal breakers, which are totally also super healthy to have.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think that's growth. And I think also intimacy is increased there, insofar as you continue to trust each other, you feel good about each other. Mm-hmm. In that process, you know, you can tell each other things. Like one of the things, it's like a final point on that, I guess, is like,
mm-hmm,
one of the things that I realized I really, really wanted and needed from a romantic partner was an ability to tell hard truths, right? Like I need my partner to be able to tell me stuff that they know is going to piss me off or whatever, mm-hmm, right? Upset me or cause me some level of, you know, consternation, some kind of upsetness, right? But tell me anyway, right? Like that's really important, you know, for me. And that is what helps me. Typically those things are things that are tough for me to work through.
Mm-hmm.
But if I never hear it, I never have to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an instance where it's like, okay, now I'm too comfortable. Cause now there's something going on in the background and I'm just like blissfully ignorant.
And could you give the folks an example of a hard truth that you've heard, just so others can feel that gauge for themselves as well?
Super simple. My partner telling me I am attracted to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like that's just the easiest, most direct example that I also think most people probably resonate with, right? It's this idea that you're dating someone and they're, you know, oh, what if they check out the person who just walked by? If they do, you're supposed to be pissed because like something, right? And so hearing that, you know, is hard. It's hard to deal with. Like it triggers feelings of insecurity. It triggers feelings of a breach of a cultural norm,
mm-hmm,
that I grew up with, you know, that I was literally raised in for, you know, decades. It's really hard, you know? And so like that's, and don't get me wrong, you know, like nowadays that's a pretty low level hard truth for me.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's like that easiest example by far. That's the one that I encountered sort of probably first in like non-monogamy also, you know? But it's like, that's also one that I think people deal with, you know, all the time. Like, oh, you're another person with like preferences. And I like can't handle it. You know,
be attracted to multiple people at once.
Yeah,
hold like, on a second. Yeah.
Which is of course silly because I've felt that way like yeah. a million, not just like once, like a million times.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I've never been in a relationship where I wasn't attracted to someone else at the same time, at least physically, right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. And so yeah, it's that goes to the hypocrisy thing too. Right? Like, I feel it, but it's not okay for you to feel it. Or if you feel it, you better not say it. Because now if you say it, you're disrespectful. Right? But that's just silly. Like, I would rather, I hold that value pretty high, that someone is going to tell me things that are difficult for me to hear. Because I, you know, and you know, as, again, kind of a side point, I guess, like, that's important to me because I don't want to date not you. You know what I mean? Like if I'm dating you, I want to date you. I don't want to date like, yeah, not you. Like,
why? Like it's kind of like morphous kind of
yeah.
cloudy. Like I'm like, what is this? There's like a little, there's an actual like cloud in front of your
right. like, personality I can't see.
That I'm like, it's in there, right? Okay, we're doing metaphors again.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's like my, on.
Yeah, the fog lights. Yeah. Yeah, it's like if I really felt that trait was so valuable, I would go find someone else who had it. You know, yeah. like I would not, like I'm not doing you any favors either by dating you because I, based upon a misperception of who you are, you know, that's almost worse, right? Because now it's like, I specifically like not you. You know, it's like an insult, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of, it's like, I'd rather know my partner fully, 100% fully, which is probably impossible, you know, really, but, mm-hmm. But like,
and they're growing all the time and changing.
Yeah, constantly changing. Maybe they don't even know themselves as well as, you know, like I'm not going to know somebody better than they know themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, I would just rather, I'd rather have a clear picture, you know, of what I'm doing, what I'm getting into. And if, you know, if I really don't like it, I'll, you know, I'll leave. And if I do, you know, my partner will be better off because now they get to be themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't have to hide anything. It's easier for them to sleep at night for sure, not having to do that. And now they're also potentially going to meet someone who doesn't dislike that trait, right? Someone who likes that trait. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to be able to find someone who has the traits that I want. Like it's win-win across the board. But when you don't get all the information, you can't, you know, you can't make the choice. It's an illusion of a choice, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So, right. It's kind of stuck in potential ambivalence land /
yeah.
a little bit of a pretend going on, which is
right. Right. So yeah. So that's a good example. I think the, you know, my partner being attracted to someone else, it's hard for me to hear, but it's better for me to hear it. And if and when I do hear it and I get over it, then, oh, wait, actually, maybe it wasn't that big a deal. Maybe I shouldn't care about this thing. And, oh, I've grown now, mm-hmm. right? Now it doesn't bother me as much because mm-hmm. it shouldn't anyway, as far as my assessment is concerned, right, for myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't bother me anyway. And so now I'm actually in a better state than I was. And all I had to do was I had to do two things. I had to suffer a little bit, like a little, right? And I had to create an environment where they felt comfortable being vulnerable with me, right? Which oddly circles back to the beginning of the conversation about me being comfortable with you, right? Because you make you create a circumstance in which it makes me feel like I can be vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. around you.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler, if you said that, you know, you were attracted to someone else while I was around, you know, I don't think I would get jealous. I don't think I would get jealous.
You might.
But you might.
You might. Oh, you might.
Environment or...
Yeah. I would do my damnedest to make you jealous. I would. I'd be like, look at that other guy. Look how hot he looks in that other t-shirt that looks like a tablecloth. Like, look at that. That's a better tablecloth t-shirt than the one you're wearing. I just think like,
you know I'm insecure about my tablecloth shirt.
It looks real good on that other guy, don't you think?
That's crossing my boundary. Damn it. And then you know, a cry and 10 minutes later I go, yeah. Okay. Tyler's still walking next to me on the sidewalk, and we're still holding hands. He's whispering sweet nothings into my ear.
As I do.
Probably means it's okay. We're probably cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And I need to probably work on that insecurity about my tablecloth t-shirt.
Right.
Maybe I should start by not calling it the tablecloth t-shirt. Maybe could. A boundary, don't call my t-shirt the tablecloth t-shirt.
Call it how I see it. Okay, I call it how I see it. Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, for those listening and... I tell my partner this all the time that I'm going to be doing a full wardrobe redux in the next year. It's going to happen. And this is another form of holding accountability with myself is saying out loud, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. Okay.
Can't wait.
Also, though this shirt is not a part of that wardrobe redux. I will say this is part of the vision going forward here.
Good. It's a taste. That shirt is a taste of what's to come. That's not
what's to come. It's really good. Another incentive to watch the YouTube version. Thank you very much, people.
Right. It's a great tablecloth, everybody. It's a great tablecloth.
Thank you. Tyler, thanks for sharing your stories, your wisdom. Yeah. Thanks for all the friendship and the love that you've given me over the years that we get to share together.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you don't dislike me like you did at the beginning. So that's good. That's growth right there.
I actually right before the episode, I was talking to my friend Joey Cardell and I was telling that exact story. I was like,
oh yeah.
I didn't like Tyler at the beginning. It was I just didn't. And told him about the whole mature versus immature masculinity experience that I had within myself. For that experience. It was really great. Anyways, cool. Okay, Tyler, enjoy. Talk to you later. And till next time.
All right. Thanks. Kiss See
yourself.
Ya.
Well, that was an absolute hoot. Tyler, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your wisdom. So, Ampers, check it out. I have some events coming up. I'll be teaching a workshop before Synthesis Dance at Ohm Culture on Thursday, July 23rd. It'll probably be around 7:30. And later on that Saturday, July 25th, at Wallingford Playfield Park in Seattle, Washington, I'll be co-hosting with my friends Sean Walsh and Emily Shimada a Express Yourself Love Dance. Yes, that's right. We'll be having an outdoor ecstatic dance event at 6 p.m. July 25th. It's a Saturday. It's going to be beautiful outside. Emily's going to teach a movement workshop at the beginning, and then Sean and I will be curating the dance, the playlist, that whole experience. We might even have a little kava bar, and we'll have a little closing circle that I will help facilitate as well. And it's going to be so much fun, and I can't wait to be outside dancing with others again. And in August, I plan on hosting a pretty big event with a friend of mine. So we'll be having a really cool experience coming up. So make sure to sign up on the email list on loveamped.com and follow me on Instagram at loveampedseth. And there's just so much good stuff cooking, and it's been good. It's continuing to be greater. And thank you so much for watching. Until next time, love yourselves out there.
Blast into self-love, the journey to revolutionizing your inner world. The online course by Seth Pearson of LoveAmped is available now at loveamped.com. In this program, you will evolve to a fully self-compassionate version of yourself by identifying and growing in self-love areas that have been holding you back for years, maybe even your entire life. We will learn about the concepts surrounding emotions and how to address those emotions through journaling and self-reflection. We will face our fears to transmute them into positive thought patterns that stick for life. All this in 15 easy-to-understand sections with videos, journaling, and exercises for you to try at home. Blast into self-love, the journey to revolutionizing your inner world. The online course by Seth Pearson of LoveAmped is available now at loveamped.com.
This was LoveAmped, a podcast by Seth Pearson. Check out loveamped.com for more info on today's topic.